So we're going to talk about tactics. Now, I'm sure there's some students in the room. I want you guys to imagine a few scenarios with me. If you're a student here, I want you to imagine that you're hanging out with friends, maybe after class, okay? You're in the hallway, and someone in your group of friends says something like, I've never understood how anyone can believe in a good and loving God. I mean, look around the world. Look at all the evil that's out there. Some good God, right? And you as a Christian student are thinking, gulp, you know? Or maybe you're at work, okay, and you're sitting with your coworkers, and not all your coworkers are Christians, and so you're sitting and you're having maybe lunch or a snack or something like that, and one of your coworkers says, you know, I was watching on TV last night, there was a documentary, and he says something like, it was on the Bible, and he says, that Bible is so full of contradictions, I can't believe anyone would be dumb enough to believe it's God's word. Gulp, you know, you're thinking, okay, I want to say something. What? How do I proceed? Or maybe you're at a family function, and for some reason, we all have an atheist brother-in-law. I don't know how that works, okay? I got one, and you're at a family function, and you know, we just had Christmas. You're sitting down on the couch, and your brother-in-law or whoever turns to you and says something like, the late Billy Graham was certainly a good guy, except for the fact that he was an intolerant, homophobic bigot. And you're thinking, gulp, you know, I want to have an impact. I want to say something that's going to be productive, that may move the conversation along, that maybe to get him or her thinking. But you don't know how to proceed. Oftentimes we're caught off guard when people in the culture say things like these, and we don't know what to do. Maybe you're here and you're thinking, well, listen, Tim, I probably can't lead that person to Christ at that very moment. And so what's the point? Why bother even getting into discussion? What I want to do, I want to give you something today that actually will help you be productive and give you confidence to engage in those conversations. This may surprise you. I can do a lot of conversations with people who don't share my views. And I never have it as my primary goal, listen, in that conversation, to lead that person to Christ. Now, before you start throwing stones at me, hear me out. Of course, I want to see the kingdom grow, and I want to proclaim the gospel, and I want to see people come to know Christ. But in every conversation, sometimes it's a little forced. You know, I'm sitting, I'm talking with a friend, and they're not a believer, and we're talking about the hockey game last night. You guys, I don't know if this is going to work for you guys. Does anyone here watch hockey? Okay, I'm from Toronto, okay? Toronto, Canada, where I left 2 days ago and it was negative 25 degrees, okay? Yeah, I know. Can you believe that? And we're talking about the hockey game. Oh, you see all those saves that goalie was making. They couldn't get anything by that goalie. He was making save after save after save. That reminds me, did you know that Jesus has saved you from your sins? You see how that's kind of a little awkward transition? But sometimes that's what we feel like, man, I got to get there somehow. So I'm going to, and I think the people we talk to think, you know, we're not being as sincere as we could be. There's a couple problems, though, in trying to like ram the gospel into every conversation. One is our culture is religiously ignorant, okay? And that's not a put down. I'm not name calling. I'm trying to be descriptive here. I'm saying they don't understand the words that are coming out of our mouths, okay? When we say words like gospel and repentance and faith and all these, they either don't know what we mean or have misconstrued what we mean. It's like we're speaking a different language. The other thing about this is oftentimes we go to share the gospel. I want to talk to my brother-in-law about Jesus and what happens. He brings up science. Wait a second, I'm talking about Jesus Christ and you're bringing up the Big Bang or something like that. It's because our culture has these things that we call gospicals. Everyone say gospical. Now, don't look it up. It's not a real word, okay? What do you think a gospical is? An obstacle of the gospel, yeah. And that's what apologists do, essentially. One of the things we do is we remove obstacles of the gospel, so people are more receptive to hearing our message and receiving the message. Other gospels are things like hell. You know, you want to talk about Jesus Christ, how he died for people's sins, and they say, how can you believe in a loving God who would send anyone to hell? Hell's a gospel. The Bible can be a gospel. Oh, you're talking about the guy in that book that's full of contradictions or it's unreliable or can't be trusted? And so you got to address that. Evolution can be agnostical for people. And so on and on we go. And maybe you've been in those situations. The other thing is, man, if we got to get to the gospel in every conversation, and if you can get there, go there. I'm not putting that down, okay? But in every single conversation, it can be a little uncomfortable. And I want to show a quick video, short clip, to show maybe some of you guys resonate with this idea. We can get the volume up on this. Perfect. All right, so, and that's true. That's actually a clip from a commercial Billy Graham Association put together. Yeah, it's true. Sharing your faith doesn't have to be hard, okay? And we're gonna go through, I think, a productive way that we can do that, a way to have maximum impact. Now, I said I don't consider myself necessarily an evangelist in every single conversation. I consider myself in every conversation to be an ambassador for Christ, an ambassador for Christ. In 2 Corinthians 5:20, Paul says this, "Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God." Now, I want you guys to think for a moment about what it means to be an ambassador for someone. I think an ambassador has certain kinds of skills. You know, I'm here, I'm a Canadian. Is there any other Canadians here? No, I'm on my own here. So I'm an ambassador. I'm an ambassador for Canada. And if I'm a poor ambassador, you guys may look down on Canada for that reason. And if I can be a good ambassador, you may think, hey, those Canadians are all right. Now, to understand what a good ambassador looks like, before we look at that, it might be helpful to look at what a bad ambassador for Christ looks like. And here's an example, okay? Here's an example, not a video. All right, so that is an example of a bad ambassador for Christ. You notice the gospel that came up there? You know, don't judge me. I only believe in science. Now, it should go without saying, don't baptize your friends without them knowing, okay? So what does a good ambassador look like? Well, at Stand to Reason, we talk about an ambassador model. We think an ambassador has three essential skills. The first is knowledge. You have to know some things, but you don't have to know everything, okay? You don't have to have a PhD or a master's degree. Those things can help because you want to know some stuff. You got to have an accurately informed mind. And yesterday, we spent a whole lot of time getting our minds informed on some different issues, okay? Not only do you want knowledge, but you need wisdom. Now, those aren't the same thing, okay? The wisdom is how you can communicate your message, okay? And for Christians, sometimes that involves using illustrations and analogies and asking good questions and all of these things. So you want to be wise. Knowledge, wisdom, and the last thing that's absolutely essential is character, okay? Because you can have a lot of knowledge and maybe a little bit of wisdom, but still be a jerk, okay? In which case, just keep your mouth closed, okay? Don't tell anyone you're a Christian because you make Christians look bad. So you want to have character. It was Martin Luther King Jr. who actually said, those whom you would change, you must first love, and they must know that you love them. That's a powerful statement. Because oftentimes when we talk to people we don't agree with, we can start to get a little heated. And the person may not even think that you love them anymore, right? And of course, Martin Luther King Jr., he was talking about changing people's minds on racism and segregation and this kind of thing. And we're looking to change people's minds on a whole lot of issues, okay? All right, so knowledge, wisdom, and character. Now, some people think, okay, there's these ambassadors for Christ. We're all ambassadors, but there's this elite group of ambassadors, and we'll call them apologists, okay? They're the guys who are out there defending the faith and answering questions and doing all that kind of stuff, okay? It's like you got the police force, and then you got those special SWAT team or whatever, the special forces, right? That's not true, though. The Bible is clear. We're all called to be ambassadors, and ambassadors are apologists, okay? You're all Christian apologists if you're a follower of Christ. Now, it may be helpful to talk about what we mean by apologist. It actually, that word, apologetics, comes from a Greek word out of 1 Peter 3:15. In that passage, it says, always be prepared to give an answer or a defense. That word there is apologia, which really means a legal defense or answer, to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. And it's almost like Peter knew, okay, these people might give a reason or a defense or an answer when asked, but they might be jerks about it. And so he adds preemptively, but do this with gentleness and respect, okay? There it is. There's the character component. But there's much more than just 1 Peter 3:15. And by the way, if you're taking notes and you just want to listen, you can always email me. I'll send you my slides, okay? It's just tim@str.org, and I'm happy to do that. I really like this passage. It's 2 Corinthians 10:4-5. It says, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. Well, what are these strongholds? He says, we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. Did you know that there are arguments and lofty opinions in our culture that are raised up against the knowledge of God? You know that? And it's your job to destroy them. Not the people, okay? You don't destroy the arguer, you destroy the arguments. We destroy opinions, not people. We could go on. Jude 3 says this, behold, although I was very eager to write to you about our common salvation, I found it necessary to write appealing to you to contend, there's that word, contend, for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. And then finally, here's Jesus' own words. He's asked, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. That's what we're doing right now. We're loving God with our minds. You see, a lot of people think when you just imagine people loving God, you think of worship, and we did. I mean, our minds were even engaged then too. We're loving God, we're worshiping. Absolutely. But that's not the only time we're loving God. I think when we open up the scriptures, when we're studying over a text, when we're doing our morning devotions, what we're doing is we're loving God with all of ourselves, including our minds. That's what Jesus commanded. Okay, so how do we take, here's one more. I like this verse. I added this one. Colossians 4:5-6. Okay, 4, 5, 6. Easy to remember. And it says this, walk in wisdom towards outsiders, making the best use of your time. Stop right there. He's saying, be smart, okay? Walk in wisdom. Be smart when you talk to people. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt. That right there is be nice or be kind, right? Salt seasons, it makes things taste better. And then finally, it says, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. Be tactical, be ready with an answer. This is what we're going to talk about here. Now, what does all this look like? When you have all of these passages, we looked at a few here just very briefly. How do you do that practically? I mean, that's the real question. Great, we give a defense, contend, answer each person, all these. How can I do that this week? And I'll tell you how you do it this week. It's nothing fancy, it's real modest. All you're going to do this week is put a stone in someone's shoe. Not literally, though, okay? Have you ever had a stone in your shoe? Have you ever had a stone in your sandal? Like you're wearing one of these like flip-flops and it's like, and your kit, and it defies physics, how it stays in there. But maybe you had a stone in your shoe. I actually, these exact shoes, in fact, I have three daughters, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 2-year-old, okay? So you need to pray for me, all right? I am outnumbered. And the other day, I went to put, it was Sunday morning, I went to put on my these shoes, and I put them on, and I, you know, we're in a rush, and I'm heading out the door. I take about 3 steps, and I know immediately that my youngest daughter, she loves, like, finding rocks, bringing them in our house, and she put one in my shoe. And I had to stop immediately, untie my shoe, take it off. I had to deal with the stone in my shoe, right? Because it just keeps bothering you as you're walking. This is what our plan is. This is our goal. When people talk to us, they have conversation with us, whether it's 3 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, whatever, I want to put a stone in their shoe so they're walking away from our conversation annoyed, but in a good way. I want them thinking about what I just said, and I want them to think about it over, so it gets them, has the most impact on their lives. And hopefully that plants a seed to eventually lead to that person coming to know Christ. And so that's what we're going to do. I'm going to show you how you can put a stone in someone's shoe and give you some questions to do that. Now, a lot of people go to a conference like we had yesterday, and you learn a whole lot of things. We talked about pro-life persuasion, arguments for the pro-life view. We talked about did an atheist role play, and we talked about some of those arguments. We looked at the evidence for the resurrection. If you have all that content, the question is, how do you move from the content that I'm learning at conferences or Sunday morning and get into a conversation? How do I move from the scholarship to the relationship? And what we need is, we need some tactics is what we need. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you those. It's kind of here's our game plan. It's actually from a book that I didn't write, okay? I'm going to promote, I didn't write it. But I think I tell people you shouldn't be allowed to graduate high school without reading this book, because it will help you be a better communicator, conversationalist with people who do not share your convictions. It's just called Tactics, a Game Plan in Discussing Your Christian Convictions. If you like what I'm talking about, it's straight from the book, okay? Straight from the book. Now, I used to think when I get into conversations with people, it was my job to be the Bible answer man. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Like someone's talking with me and they say something like, well, Tim, there is no God. I'm the Bible answer man. I would turn and say, oh, yes, there is. And here's why, you know, and I go through all these arguments. But notice what happened. He made the statement, not me. And yet here I am doing all the work. And what ended up happening was I would end up preaching sermons that nobody wanted to hear. And I was answering questions that technically nobody was asking. Okay, and so he had made the comment, the statement, and what we're going to get to is it's his job to defend that comment or statement. It's not my job to refute it. And so oftentimes unbelievers say things like Christians are intolerant, or you can't trust the Bible, or all religions lead to God, or something like that, and they fold their arms and they say, I'm waiting. Okay, Christian, try to refute me, right? And so... We need a better approach. I want to show you a different approach, and the approach is one that it was mastered by Lieutenant Columbo. Do you guys know who Lieutenant Columbo is? How many people know who Columbo is? Okay, great. This is good. So Lieutenant Columbo, for those who don't know, is a bumbling, seemingly inept TV detective who has remarkable success catching criminals, okay? The inspector, Columbo, would arrive at the scene of the crime. His hair is a mess. His trench coat looks like he slept in it. He always had like a cigar like wedged between his fingers. He'd have a notepad, but he wouldn't have a pen or a pencil. He'd have to bum one off someone. To all appearances, Columbo looked harmless and stupid, but he wasn't harmless and stupid because Columbo had a plan. You see, Lieutenant Columbo, he would poke around the scene of the crime. He would scratch his head and then do his famous, he'd furrow his brow and then usually say something like, I got a problem. There's something about this thing that bothers me. That's how he sounded, okay? Something like that. There's something about this thing that bothers me. And he turned to like the suspect, the killer or the thief or whoever. He said, you seem like a very intelligent person. Do you mind if I ask you some questions? And so he'd ask his question, he'd ask another question, he'd ask another question. And he'd one more ting him to death, question after question after question. And he'd say, I'm sorry, I keep asking so many questions, but it's a habit. And this, my friends, is a habit that Christians need to get into, okay? We need to start asking more questions. That is going on the offensive, but in an inoffensive way. Now, why ask questions? There's a number of reasons why I think questions are better than statements in a lot of areas, okay? Of course, if someone asks you a question, I answer it. But if they make a statement, we need to start asking questions. There's a book by Hugh Hewitt, and it's called In But Not Of. And one of the chapters in it, he talks about in every conversation, Christians should be asking a half a dozen questions, okay? In every conversation. And here are some of the reasons that I could come up with for why questions are better than statements. For one, questions help you understand a person's view. This is crucial because oftentimes you're talking to someone and you just need more clarification. And so just ask them about it. Sometimes people come up to me after I'm given a presentation and they'll say, Tim, you know, my friend's a Buddhist. And can you recommend a good book or DVD or something on Buddhism so I could get to know the view? And I usually tell that person, hey, your friend's a Buddhist. Take them out for coffee or lunch and ask them about Buddhism, right? You get to know someone's view that way. There's other reasons. Questions take the pressure off you. Look, when you're asking the question, there's no pressure here. You're not answering anything. It's actually where you want to be. You're not in the hot seat. Questions keep you from distorting someone's view. This is very common. This is called straw manning in philosophy or logic. Okay, you don't want to straw man someone's view by distorting it. What you want to do is make sure you have a clear understanding of their view, and questions will help you do that. Questions are friendly and help you build relationships. That's great. Questions actually show that you're interested. When I first met my wife in the science library in Toronto, we were both at the same university, and I was studying physics, she was studying chemistry, and there was chemistry, okay? I'm just saying, it was chemistry. We ended up going, she invited me to her birthday party, and they were going bowling, okay? And I was the only one who, I didn't know anybody. I was getting to know her friends. And so I started asking a lot of questions. And one of the guys there, I must have asked him, 50, 60 questions. He went home, I went home, everyone went home, and he ended up calling Stacy, my wife, and saying, that Tim is the most interesting person I've ever met. I didn't say anything about myself. I spent the whole night asking about him. Here it is. Interested is interesting, okay? And I was interested in him. Very, very important. Questions give you an education, obviously. Questions don't require a defense. You're not making a statement, therefore you don't require a defense. Here's the main point. Questions get you in the game. I gave those illustrations at the very beginning, you know. The Bible's full of contradictions. And all of us are thinking, okay, what do I do? What do I say? Why not ask a question? I'm going to give you the question to ask, by the way. Okay, so questions get you in the game. Let me just make a little bit more of a defense for why we ask questions. Blaise Pascal was a mathematician, philosopher, Christian, very smart, and he says, people are generally better persuaded by the reasons which they themselves discovered than by those which have come into their minds by others. If I just tell you to believe in God, just believe. Here's it. You're more likely to put your guard up, I think. I think that's what he's saying. But if I can ask you a question, like, where do you think the universe came from? Or what do you do with the moral law that's on? If I start asking you a question, now I'm getting you to think for yourself. I think you're more likely to come to a certain conclusion than if I just tell you to come to that conclusion. I like what Francis Schaeffer here says. He's a theologian, philosopher. He was so good at talking to unbelievers, skeptics, and atheists. And he says this, if I have only an hour with someone, I will spend the first 55 minutes asking questions and finding out what's troubling their heart and mind, and the last 5 minutes I will share something of the truth. That is profound. Because I think most of us, you got an hour with an unbeliever, You'll spend the first 55 minutes preaching at them, and then you'll say, do you have any questions? The last 5 minutes, right? I think that's all instinctively what we want to do. Francis Schaeffer was the man at this kind of thing. One of my heroes. Now, forget Francis Schaeffer and Blaise Pascal. Maybe you have heard of Jesus Christ, okay? And Jesus, this was his tool of choice with friend and foe alike. He would use questions. If you read through the Gospels, you will find that Jesus answered 183 questions. But if you go and count up all the questions he asked, you get a number 307. Think about that. I think Jesus was the wisest, most intelligent person that ever walked the earth. And he asked more questions than he answered. Is that because he didn't know a bunch of stuff? Wrong answer. Read through the Gospels and you will see that what he's doing is what Blaise Pascal was talking about. He got people to think and rethink about God and who he is and who Jesus was within their own heart and mind by asking questions. By asking questions, just go through. He also used questions, by the way, to trap those who were trying to trap him. He was just a master at asking questions. We should follow Jesus' model here, okay? All right, so what is the Columbo approach, the Columbo tactic? If you got your blue card here, we're going to go through two of the Columbo questions. The first one is this. First Columbo question is, what do you mean by that? Everyone say, what do you mean by that? I'll tell you what I mean by that. What do you mean by that is the kind of question that gives you more clarification. Sometimes something is said, you don't know how to proceed, and so what you're going to do is you're going to get more clarification. You're going to ask the question, what do you mean by that? You can't proceed without finding out what they mean. And so let me give you a couple of illustrations for this. So for example, if you're talking with someone, let's say they say something like, evolution has proven that God is unnecessary. Now here's the deal. I know there's a bunch of people in this room. Their knee-jerk reaction is to go into full creationist mode. And this is a knee-jerk, and you're gonna like do a roundhouse kick or something and start laying out your case for against evolution and for creation and all that stuff. Forget about it. You didn't make a statement, they did. Now they have to clarify. Now they have to defend. And so evolution has proven that God is unnecessary. What question are you gonna ask immediately? You're gonna ask, what do you mean by that? Specifically, what do you mean by evolution? Because let me tell you something. On some definitions of evolution, I'm not an evolutionist. On other definitions of evolution, I am an evolutionist, and so are you. If they mean change over time, then I guess we're all evolutionists because we all believe in change. Okay, read Genesis, things are changing. And so we got to be clear on what do you mean. So if someone says, Tim, they ask me, do you believe in evolution? My first question is, what do you mean by evolution? Okay, we got to nail that down. How about this one? Christians are all intolerant. You're going to ask, what do you mean by that? Or specifically, what do you mean by intolerant? Turns out the word tolerance has changed its meaning. Tolerance used to mean we disagree, but I, respect your right to disagree with me. Okay, they hold that view. Today, tolerance means all views are equal. And if you think one view is better than another view, they call you intolerant. It's name calling. Someone said you're intolerant. Well, you could say, well, you're ugly and smell funny. No, don't do that. Don't do that. But that's all that's going on there. Know that they're just calling you a name, okay? And let's get the names out of the way and let's actually talk rationally here. Okay, so what do you mean by intolerance? You could ask, if someone said all religions are basically the same. This happened to me. I was on vacation with my brother and sister-in-law and, we're having a nice meal and sister-in-law said something like this and, my knee-jerk reaction was, again, to do that roundhouse kick. But I didn't make the claim she did. And so I'm going to ask, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? What do you mean all religions are basically the same? Because it turns out they're not basically the same, right? We know, they're different when it comes to origins and morality and destiny and all these big questions of life. And so make them defend. Okay, how about this one? It's irrational to believe in the God of the Bible. You're going to say? See how easy that is? What do you mean by that? What do you mean by irrational? You could talk about rationality and logic and those kind of things in a godless universe. I don't think they exist in that. You could ask, what do you mean by the God of the Bible? In fact, when I talk to atheists, I do not engage until I know what they mean by God. Because it turns out most of the time, the God they don't believe in is the God I don't believe in either, right? The God they have in their mind is this finite being, and he's maybe like Superman or something, but he's got some flaws, and he's, you know, gets, and so that's not the God I believe in. The God I believe in is eternal and omnipotent, you know, all the omnis, loving and gracious. And so make sure that they're not just thinking about a bearded man sitting on a cloud, okay? It's the wrong God. Someone says, my body, my choice, you know, pro-life issue, the abortion issue. I if you want to engage that, you want to ask a question. You're going to ask, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by choice? What do you mean by choice? Because some choices, I'm absolutely pro-choice. I'm pro-choice about women's decisions to, you know, marry who they want and all kinds of things. What doctors and, but what, some choices are wrong, okay? And we shouldn't be pro-choice. I'm not pro-choice about drinking and driving, okay? I don't think you should get drunk and then get behind the wheel. I'm not pro-choice about that. And I think there should be laws to protect, and there are. There are some choices that are wrong. What do you mean by your body? Well, we talked about this yesterday. It's not your body. It's a body inside your body. It's a different body, you know? Different DNA, different, could be a male, you know? And so you could ask those questions. And how about one more? This is very common now. A lot of attacking the Old Testament, and they might say the Bible condones slavery. Now, before you start going into your apologist mode, you're going to ask a question. You're going to ask, easy, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by slavery? Turns out a lot of people have in mind a certain kind of slavery when they see the word slave, and the word slave is in the Bible. And so what is that, the same kind of slavery from 200 years ago in the South? Is that the same thing that's going on in Israel and so on in the first century? And I think you can make a strong argument that it's not. So you might want to ask those questions. Okay, don't be surprised when you say, what do you mean by that? And they look at you with a blank stare. And this is not like where you could say, na 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 boo boo or something like that. Like, gotcha. No, it's not. I mean, you did get them, but don't like, this is where the character part, remember we just talked about that? We're going to come back to this. Questions can be used to hurt people, okay? And so you're going to avoid that. Let them think about it. Say, you know what? You haven't thought about it? Let's maybe meet next week. We'll talk more. Give them an out, okay? Give them a place to go to. So they don't feel uncomfortable and don't want to ever talk to you again. Okay. All right. How about this question? We'll do one more Columbo question. So eventually, you know, you can ask, what do you mean by that all day long? What do you mean by that? 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 Eventually you get annoying. Now there's one time where you do not want to ask, what do you mean by that? And that's for you husbands. If your wife calls you an idiot, don't ask, what do you mean by that? It's not a good idea. It won't work out. Okay. Okay, how did you come to that conclusion? How'd you come to that conclusion? That's the second question. Everyone say, how'd you come to that conclusion? Let me tell you how I came to that conclusion. So the first question is the clarification. And once you know now, I understand what you believe. Now I want to know why you believe it. I know what you believe. What do you mean by that? Now I want to know why you believe it. What are your reasons? Okay. Now this question is very gracious because it assumes the person has come to a conclusion. You see, most people just believe things they heard on, you know, CNN, or they haven't looked at reasons. They just heard it and they believe it. Okay. In a lot of cases. Here's a general rule. Those who make a claim bear the burden of proof to defend the claim. Those who make the claim bear the burden of proof to defend the claim. So Christian, you know, when Easter comes along, we say, he is risen. That's the claim. You should be able to defend the claim. And if you were here yesterday, you know how to defend the claim now. But in the same way, we're not the only apologists for our position. Everyone is an apologist for their position. That is, everyone has to defend their position. And so the atheist or the Muslim or the Jew, whoever, they make claims. Let's start asking questions and making them defend the claim. And the way you do that is you ask, how did you come to that conclusion? We were doing the role play yesterday, and there was a man, and he knew Stand to Reason's material, and I had pretended to be an atheist, and he asked me, how did you come to that conclusion? And I knew immediately, you know, that guy read tactics. He knew what to do, and so he kind of put me on the spot. Quick story. I actually went to teacher's college after getting a degree in physics. I wanted to become a high school teacher. So I went to a year of teacher's college, and it was a secular university. I was like the only Christian in my group. And there was about 60 of us that would go from class to class together. It was awesome. I mean, my faith grew in that time because every day I was challenged, every day. And one of the days we went to the Royal Ontario Museum. Ontario is a province. We don't have states, we have provinces. And I went to the Royal Ontario Museum. And it's a really cool museum. And we got a backstage pass because we were going to be future teachers. And they wanted us to see what the museum had to offer. And so we stood in front of this Barosaurus, is what it's called. It's the largest sauropod dinosaur in Canada. It's 90 feet across. Sauropod, long neck, long tail. And so we're standing in front of this thing, and one of my friends who would debate with me nearly every day, and when I say debate, was very friendly, okay? Like, we were friends the whole way through. In fact, some of the guys who used to debate me every day, the one guy became a department head at a high school, and his dad was a superintendent, so he got his job right away, and he worked as he climbed up, and he was a department head, like, 3 years in, and his physics teacher retired, and he called me up and said, "Tim, I want you to come work in my department." And that to me, I turned it, because of what I had going on with ministry, I turned it down, but it was like, wow, like, this guy, we disagree on everything, and yet he wants me to be there. We're standing in front of this Barosaurus, and my friend turns to me and says, "There's no way Noah's fitting that on the ark." And I'm like, I can't get one day off? One day. Now, look it. Of course, knee-jerk reaction. It actually was more like one of these reactions. But I didn't make the claim, he did. And so I don't need to defend anything, okay? And so what I asked kind of a how'd you come to that conclusion question, okay? There's no way Noah's fitting on the ark. Okay, how'd you come to that conclusion? So I asked him. I said, well, then you must, this guy's like an engineer becoming, who's now wants to be a teacher. And I said, how big was the boat? I mean, this is an engineering question. How big? He's got a big dinosaur, okay? If it can't fit, you must know how big the boat was. And he said, no, I don't know how big. No one knows how big. Well, actually, it's written in Genesis. You just got to make the cubit conversion, right? Okay, you don't know how big the boat was, and you must know how many animals were on the boat, right? Because if there's not many, then certainly it could fit on there. It could fit on modern-day boats, you know? And I don't know how many animals were on. How could anyone know that? Okay, so you don't know how many animals were on the boat. You don't know how big it was, but you're sure he couldn't fit that on the boat. And you could see that, like, okay, fine. Maybe he could. He was just trying to mock me. Now, honestly, maybe you're an old earth creationist, young earth creationist. You may answer that question differently depending on your view. But here's the thing. You don't have to go there. In that situation, I didn't make a claim. He did. And what I did was, I enforced the burden of proof. What happened was, he threw down the gauntlet. You guys know what a gauntlet is? Medieval glove, right? Throw the gauntlet. In medieval times, you throw it down, the other guy picks it up, and then the duel happens. Today, and this happens all the time, people just say things. They throw down the gauntlet, and then they celebrate like they won something, right? And the problem is, was that a good little celebration dance I did? I don't know why I did that. Let's try to scrub that from your memories. We need to start enforcing the burden of proof, and we do that by asking, how did you come to that conclusion, okay? So it's a game plan, very simple, and you can all do it this week. Some of you are going to go to your jobs, and you're going to be talking with people. Don't share your conviction. You're going to go to school or whatever. Talk to people. Start looking for opportunities to ask, what do you mean by that? And how did you come to that conclusion? That's your game plan. Now, there's other questions and there's other tactics that I'm not going to talk about here, but they're in the book Tactics, which I'm again strongly recommending. It's not the kind of book that says, here's how you answer the evolution question, here's how you answer the resurrection, it's the kind of question that says, doesn't matter what you're talking about, here's what you need to know in the conversation. Okay. Now here's a warning. Questions can be used to hurt people. You can see, you ask someone, how did you come to that conclusion? And they're like, and now you're demanding reasons. Imagine if people started asking you on a regular basis, what are your reasons for that? What are your reasons for that? Why? I mean, my little girls do this. And it's like, eventually, stop. I don't know why, okay? I mean, I try to know as much, but there's some things I just don't know the answer to. I'm sorry. And so don't be surprised if people are caught off guard. Questions are not to be used as a hammer to beat someone up. They're used, I like this analogy, as a flashlight in a dark room to guide a person to the truth, okay? That's how you're using questions. Guide the conversation towards the truth. Okay, last thing, and then I'm going to be heading to the airport. The Marines have a slogan, and I think it's apt for us. The more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in battle. I mean, this just makes sense, right? We got to start training ourselves. Now, after a message like this, you may think, oh yeah, that was good. And then you just go for lunch and you're forgetting all about it. Here's what you need to do. You need to start doing this today. When you're out at lunch with your family, you know, you're in the car driving from here, what do you guys want to do for lunch? Someone's got to say, what do you mean by that? Right? Someone's got to say, let's go to Subway. How'd you come to that conclusion? Just start doing it in the safety of your family and in your group. I ask these questions to my daughters all the time. If you want a critically thinking student, a critical thinking child or grandchild, start asking them questions. Get them thinking. My daughters say things, what do you mean by that? How'd you come to that conclusion? You know, and I'm getting them to think. My daughter's 7. She can make the pro-life case that I made yesterday. She can answer the question why she believes in God, not just because mommy and daddy do. Okay, we are raising a critical thinker, and it's because we ask questions like this. And so that's my challenge to you: do it today. Don't put it off, because 3 months from now you're going to be sitting down with a coworker. They're going to make a statement, and you're going to, God help me. What was he talking about 3 months ago, right? Okay, let's pray. God, we thank you for this time, this maybe a little different from a Sunday morning message, a training session to get us just maybe a little more confidence, a little more courage and boldness, so that we enter this week, we are looking for opportunities where we can ask these kinds of questions to move conversations towards the gospel as the final result. And hopefully, God, by your Spirit, you draw people through our questions to yourself. And we pray this in your name. Amen.
Hit the road.
Thank you.